The Tel Aviv regime's claim about Israeli captives being held at Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital is aimed at covering up its military failure. And a rights advocacy group says nearly 60 journalists have so far been killed in Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel is bombing and killing more Palestinians in the Gaza Strip as the regime's deadly onslaught in the territory enters its 45th day. The regime bombed the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza in one of its latest attacks, killing at least 15 people. Israeli strikes also killed dozens of others in Nuseirat Land and Babal Barish refugee camps in central Gaza Strip and in eastern Rafah. The regime has been bombing hospitals, schools, and residential buildings indiscriminately. These include the Saturday strike on the UN-run Fakhoura School and Al-Shifa Hospital. The bombing campaign has so far killed more than 13,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Many also remain missing, possibly under the rubble of bombed-out buildings. People who are witnessing the unending cycle of bloodshed in Gaza are critical of inaction by some Arab countries.
This is a war crime against the Palestinian people. The Arab and Islamic world, as well as the European countries, are watching us being slaughtered. We were left alone with only God to help us.
Reports coming from Gaza paint a grim picture of the situation of health facilities there. Israeli warplanes have also launched a violent attack on the vicinity of European Gaza Hospital. 25 hospitals and 52 other health facilities have stopped working because of incessant Israeli bombings, as well as the lack of fuel, equipment, and medicines. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Philippe Lazzarini, says targeting UNRWA shelters in the Gaza Strip shows a total disregard for humanity. The UNRWA chief said Israel's attacks on UN shelters blatantly contravene the rules of war. He said the number of facilities hit and civilians killed cannot just be collateral damage. Lazzarini said most of the facilities that have been hit had families in them, including older people and children. He said that they were all clearly marked as UN buildings carrying a blue flag. According to UNRWA, Israel has directly hit 17 of its facilities in Gaza since October 7. On Saturday, over 200 people were killed after Israeli airstrikes targeted two UNRWA schools in Jabalia. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has called for an immediate end to the Israeli war crimes in Gaza. In a statement, Volker Turk described Israeli brutalities in Gaza as horrendous. He said the massacre of so many people and the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Gaza residents run counter to the principles of protecting civilians enshrined in international law. He said images taken in the aftermath of Israeli strikes on schools and hospitals are horrific. The UN official also decried the regime for denying Palestinians access to humanitarian assistance. He reiterated that the failure to comply with the rules of international humanitarian law constitutes war crimes. Since Israel launched its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, around 1.6 million people have been displaced inside besieged territory. Most of the people moving to the south from northern Gaza have taken shelter in Khan Yunis, which is now overcrowded. Here's what some of them had to say about the dire humanitarian situation there.
The place is very crowded, in the classrooms, staircase, corridors, and the yard. The school currently houses nearly 5,000 refugees, and more people are still coming every day. The water is very scarce. All the refugees here consume non-potable water provided by a tank. Many children suffer from intestinal colic due to the contaminated water, in addition to malnutrition, because most of the food they eat is canned food.
There is a severe shortage of basic goods such as oil, sugar, flour. Since Khan Yunis received thousands of refugees from across Gaza Strip, these basic goods can no longer be found here.
We are displaced due to the heavy shelling on a place called Fallujah, and we went to Jabalia. The area was also targeted, and the corpses piled up on the streets because of the continuous bombardment. The ambulances carried the corpses to be buried in mass graves, and most of the corpses were mutilated. The Israeli army said it would expand the attacks, so we left.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has rejected as misleading and false the allegations that it is holding Israeli captives in the Al-Shifa hospital complex in Gaza City. Hamas said the Israeli regime is trying to cover up its military failure by leveling such allegations. It added that those claims are in line with the regime's campaign of lies and misinformation. The resistance movement noted that many of the injured captives were sent to the Al-Shifa hospital for treatment and then were returned to their places of detention. On Sunday, the Israeli military released videos showing Israeli captives are being taken to the Al-Shifa hospital, claiming that Hamas is holding them inside the medical complex. The claim is in line with the regime's accusation that Hamas headquarters are located underneath Al-Shifa hospital, which has been denied by the resistance group. At least 59 Palestinian journalists have so far been killed in the ongoing Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, which began 1.5 months ago. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, the figure is the highest number of journalists killed in wars and conflicts in recent history. It says Tel Aviv has turned its horrifying onslaught on Gaza into a killing spree for Palestinian journalists. The rights group adds the regime is deliberately targeting media professionals and offices in an attempt to impose a news blackout on its war crimes. Euromed says Israel has purposefully left no safe haven for journalists in the besieged coastal territory. We're going to cross on over now to Khan Yunis and talk to Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent who joins us. Ashraf, the Al-Shifa Hospital has been again accused by Israel in terms of holding Hamas fighters, holding some of the captives there. Tell us about that and, of course, any other information you have for us.
Well, Kaveh, of course the Israeli allegations are false because the two captives that were seen in a video from the CCTV cameras of Shifa Hospital, Hamas has acknowledged that some of the captives were wounded and they were taken to Shifa Hospital for treatment. So that's not a secret. And regarding the tunnel that the Israeli regime was talking about, it is known that Shifa Hospital was built during the British Mandate around 1946, and the British government had its military base beneath Shifa Hospital, and then the Israeli regime used the same base in 1967 when they occupied the Gaza Strip. So whoever dug that tunnel, whoever built that entrance route to the bottom of Shifa Hospital, it must have been either the British mandate or Israeli soldiers when they occupied the Gaza Strip in 1967. The Israeli regime is just playing games, trying to make excuses to bomb and destroy the Shifa Hospital, and also to claim that Shifa Hospital is a home for militants or resistance fighters. And definitely this is untrue, because Shifa Hospital has always been a medical center for treatment of patients and wounded people since it was established in 1946. And the Israeli regime, the videos that they were showing and the images were showing, they were all made up stories by the Israeli regime. They already said they made up these stories even before the start of this war. They've made the same allegations back in 2021, 2012, and 2014, 2012, and 2008. So these allegations are not new. I remember back in 2008, the emergency room, the ER of Shifa Hospital, was hit by a Hellfire missile right in front of my own eyes. I was heading there for a live interview with Press TV, and that place was just bombed. And we had to cancel the live interview because the service provider at the time refused to continue. They said it was extremely dangerous. So situation inside Shifa Hospital is beyond disastrous. Those who remained inside, less than 100 patients who could not be moved, and some two dozen doctors are pleading for the ICRC and the UN to take them out of Shifa Hospital. They have no food, and no running water, no water to drink. And patients are dying, especially the wounded are dying. Yesterday, a woman with a renal failure died inside Shifa Hospital, and some of the injured have died.
What about the aid that we know, the reports of it coming, but it's trickling in terms of the... It's trickling in, and it's nowhere close to what is required. The reason why I ask that is because there's so many the Palestinians that have been injured that I'm wondering if they're getting the proper aid and even food stuff for people, which we understand as a food, obviously, a natural outcome of this is there's a food crisis and therefore hunger is prevalent.
Well, the only thing that's coming in is some tents, some mineral water, some canned food and blankets and so on, and nothing really that is needed by the hospitals, especially Nasser Hospital and the European Khan Yunis Hospital and the Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah, and also the Emirati Hospital in Rafah. They're not getting any surgical supplies or medical equipment or any medicine whatsoever. They're getting basic things that will not help those who are wounded. When you have someone, his arm is shattered, his legs are shattered, the brain, head, major head injuries, they can't help them. So basically, the health ministry is waiting for the promises by Qatar, by Turkey and other countries, and Jordan as well, who said they're going to bring field hospitals into Rafah. We're talking about the southern part of the Gaza Strip. No one is talking about the northern parts. I'm talking about north of the Gaza Valley, of the Gaza Wadi. Hospitals there are almost completely out of service, especially Shifa Hospital. The Indonesian hospital all night was under attack. 12 people were killed there, including and dozens were injured. One of those injured was a journalist, and a doctor was injured by sniper fire. And the Indonesian hospital is located in the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Lahia. Just from 10 p.m. last night until this moment, more than 200 people have been killed throughout the Gaza Strip. We have 60 people who were killed in Deir el-Balah in one spot, one building, five-story building, 60 people, and the number is likely to increase. Rafah had like 15 people. And throughout the northern parts of the Gaza Strip, you have Indonesian hospital, 12 people killed. Let's not forget about that few people who died of injury because of the injuries inside Shifa Hospital. At least 200 people were killed.
All right, very well. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Ashraf Shannon from Khan Yunis. Let's bring in Mazen Khumsaya, who's a Palestinian scientist and author, who joins us. Mazen Khumsaya, welcome to the program. We're looking at this war, obviously, now over 40 days old. How do you think Israel is doing?
Well, I mean, the same level of massacres are happening, although fluctuates. Some days, like yesterday was like over 200 people killed, and now it's 76 in the past 24 hours. So there's fluctuations, but the intensity of Israeli bombing of civilians continue. That's one war on people. And then the second war, which is the military conflict between Hamas and Israel, that's not going so well for Israel, as you see from releases of what's happening, and the fact that even Israeli guy in charge of the cemetery in Mount Herzl says they are burying one person every hour or hour and a half at the cemetery. So Israel is lying about its casualties in that conflict. So there are two different aspects here, the military confrontation between Hamas and Israel, and then on the other side there's the mass slaughter of Palestinian civilians that's ongoing. And on the third level, there's the conflict, diplomatic and other media conflicts, and that is not going so well also for Israel, because what you see globally is still growing demonstrations, growing voices, and more exposing of Israeli lies that are happening, including about what happened on October 7, which clearly Israeli helicopters and gunships basically firing on Israeli civilians, killing Israeli civilians. So many of those killed were killed by the Israelis themselves. So the lies are being exposed, and the world is getting these lies. And now, on the fourth aspect is the talk about post-war, as if the war ended, and this is not going so well for Israel either. You know, the idea of ethnic cleansing of both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip to create a greater Israel, that's not going so well for Israel, both diplomatically, on the media front, and in other areas. But it seems to sell for the right-wing elements within the state of Israel that this is going to succeed. And finally, I might say on the fifth point, is there's beginnings of an international, global involvement by key players like China. There's a meeting now happening in China with some Arab foreign diplomats, and that there is a, and that is going, you know, slow, too slow for stopping the genocide, and we need much more action at the diplomatic front. I didn't mention, the only thing I didn't mention here is, of course, what's happening with Yemen and the ships and all of this. And I think this is also significant because we cannot have normality of business and shipping and all of this without normality for the Palestinians and without ending this genocide.
Thank you for that. Mazen Khumsaya, Palestinian scientist and author. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
If you can't win them, fool them. This has been the flagship public relations strategy of the Zionist regime for decades, one that it has seemingly doubled down in the wake of the events of October 7th. However, this time around, the Zionist regime has overplayed its hand and has fumbled itself into walking back lies, deleting statesmen or simply ignoring calls to explain its brazen lies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "The genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip has unmasked the Zionist colonial experiment, with over 12,000 dead already, more than half being women and children. The Zionist regime occupation has been subject to widespread condemnation and criticism worldwide. This is forcing the colonial settler regime to explain its actions as it conducts them, as public disgust from its main allies could threaten its image and its future. The West has always been the Zionist regime's number one supporter. The United States uses Israel as an outpost for its own imperialist initiatives in Western Asia and North Africa. In a sense, Tel Aviv regime acts as a 51st state, mirroring the inception of the first American colonies, a violent settler colonial formation that ethnically cleanses the indigenous population. For the illegitimate Zionist regime to continue existing, it must exert oppression not only over the Palestinians, but over any of its neighbors that insist on supporting the Palestinian cause. This brings up an inconvenience. For the regime to survive, it needs American backing. It needs it in the form of financial aid, military aid, but most importantly, in the form of political support. The political backing in the form of congressional resolutions, statements, and calls for support can only be deemed legitimate to the public eye if the public approves of the actions of the Zionist regime." The Zionist regime does not need to convince the entire world that its horrific war crimes are legitimate. It only needs to convince a Western audience. Without this key ingredient, the Zionist entity loses the very little credibility it has, along with all financial and political backing. The sly propaganda campaign is often conducted subtly using photo shoots, exclusive photo opportunities for only Western media outlets, and broadcasting doctored images and false narratives on Western social media applications. So, on one front, we have the Zionist occupation manipulating reality to show themselves as humanitarians and moral to a Western audience. This is to justify their criminal onslaught of hospitals and other civilian populated areas. On the next front, we see the Zionist media blatantly lying, hoping no one questions them. The Zionist regime's military spokesperson Daniel Hagari posted a video of an Israeli troop inspecting what they claim is an area where hostages were being held within a hospital. The troop points to a chart on the wall that contains dates with some Arabic lettering. He then claims that the Arabic on the chart are the names of Hamas fighters, and that they used this chart to organize watchkeeping shifts over supposed hostages. As confirmed by hundreds of netizens, these are in fact the days of the week. What the Zionist regime troop is pointing to is not a chart of Hamas fighter shifts. It is a calendar. Unfortunately, this video was broadcast on various news networks like BBC, CNN, Fox News, and more. On the social media front, one may be able to find comments that question the validity of these claims or make corrections. on Western news media outlets, which do not question the Zionist officials but rather act as stenographers for them, these claims are taken for fact without any investigation. Thousands to millions of people likely saw this footage and took this embarrassing, blatant lie as fact, simply because they do not know Arabic and were easily manipulated. Without any pushback from journalists, Zionist officials use Western media outlets as battering rams for their genocidal lies in attempts to normalize the brutal violence on the Palestinian people. Zionists rely on three major factors to maintain a hold over their Western audience: the ignorance of the audience, allowing them to manipulate reality freely; their status quo as U.S. allies, allowing them to present themselves as just; and lack of investigation, or perhaps willful omission of investigation from Western media, who seemingly are the only ones who enjoy exclusive access to Israeli regime operations. However, people are catching up to these lies. Not only are netizens exposing the fraudulent statements from Zionist officials in real time, but independent organizations are also now stepping up to the plate to demand authentic evidence that is corroborated by underground Palestinian testimonials. Here, the Zionist regime is suffering embarrassingly. They are too used to being taken word by word. And now, they are scrambling multiple times. The occupation regime has deleted videos it claimed were concrete evidence of Hamas hospital operations, when everyday people did their own investigation and concluded that the claims are based on staged photographs and fabrications. Even Western outlets, which seemingly act as spokespeople of their own on behalf of the Israeli regime, are being forced to report on the Zionist regime's walked-backed statements and deleted videos. Technological advancements and the ease of information transfer has stripped the occupation regime of the privilege of enjoying Western ignorance. Prior to these advancements, condemnation for the Zionist regime primarily existed within the so-called Global South. This time around, things have changed. The images and videos coming from Gaza have invoked sadness, disgust, and horror in the Western public sphere, which has typically stood by the Zionist regime for decades, often repeating Zionist lies as facts. Meanwhile, the Zionists can't conjure up a shred of truth to back up their brazenly false claims. It has reached a boiling point where, in the United States alone, hundreds of thousands are marching every weekend for Palestine. Activists are shutting down offices, weapons manufacturing plants, roads and bridges. Every lie exposed is serving as shovels worth of dirt in the grave of the colonial regime. The alternative: Israel shows its true face and leaves it up to humanity to decide. Either way, it loses.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has now been more than a month and a half since the Zionist regime has started its Holocaust in the concentration camp of Gaza, with over 12,000 people killed and just about half of them children. The regime is in the process of destroying itself as people around the world are waking up to the reality of its illegality. But not only is the world waking up to the Zionists, but to those who support them. As the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said and has reiterated that the genocide in Gaza has blown the lid off of the reality of not only this racist regime, but the support of racism by Western countries. Stay with us as we look at this and a lot more on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Houston, Texas, human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi. And out of Bristow, historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off in Houston. Mohsen, would you say the bottom line of the situation in Gaza, it's about race. It's about that the Zionists think that they are better than everyone else.
Hi, good afternoon. The Zionists, innately, the concept of Zionists and the concept of them thinking that they have to have a separate homeland is obviously in contradiction with the Jewish belief of the Jews being in exile and that they will only find their homeland after the return of the Messiah. There's this other concept of tikkun olam, meaning repairing the world. And it's innately found in Judaism, but I think the Zionists have really misinterpreted or have used this concept of reparation of the world and being the chosen ones to really sell the idea of a separate homeland of an Israeli state. And I think the way they justify the atrocities that they commit throughout the world, especially on the Palestinians, and that may be Palestinian Muslims or even Palestinian Christians, is through this idea that the Zionists are the chosen ones, and it is their own it is the responsibility of the Zionists to repair this world. I think it's a gross misinterpretation of the Jewish faith, but it is definitely used by the Zionist ideology to justify their actions to their own people. But we see that within the Zionist regime, there are many dissenting voices who disagree with this notion.
Right. Well, Tony, I want to talk about the hypocrisy of what we're seeing with this genocide in general, the Western regimes, the way that they reacted to Russia and the war in Ukraine. And when we compare it to the reaction to the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, do you see racism playing any part in this? Or just give me your overall perspective in comparing the two and how it's been handled.
Well, I mean, it is extraordinary here in Britain to see our leaders so completely out of tune with the population who've been turning up in their hundreds of thousands on the streets to support those in Palestine. And actually, I think this week we saw one of the most incredible speeches by President Erdogan, where he's saying that there is absolutely no excuse to treat civilians in the way that Israelis are treating the Palestinians, and that this is one of the worst, and I would agree with him, one of the worst and most obvious cases of genocide in the history of civilization. Because we're living in the modern world, there's no excuses for getting things wrong and making mistakes. Look, the point is that there's almost a religious aspect to the way that the Western leaders like Biden and Sunak have been supporting and following and supplying arms to the Israeli genocide. And that's, I think, one of the most important aspects to understand why it is that they are so hell-bent on helping this genocide. I don't think it's necessarily motivated by racism, but certainly by some sort of religious aim. I mean, look at the psychopathic nature of what the Israelis have been saying over the last few weeks. They're talking about, basically they've been accusing everyone else, mostly the Palestinians, of committing the crimes that they're committing. So they are behaving, the Israelis, like a kind of, not a chosen people, but a master race, like the Nazis, saying effectively that anybody else's life is worth nothing, or they are likening the Palestinians to animals. And so they are the ones behaving like Nazis, not those that they are accusing. They're accusing the British people in the Palestinian marches of...
But at the same time, Tony, sorry Nazis. To jump in here. It is true. We know about unbelievable comments by this regime. But if we look at the way, whether we're talking about the UK, the US, France, Germany, how they have responded, how they have... It's been totally different from the way they responded with, when we look at, again, with the Russian-Ukraine situation, you're talking about a world of difference. I mean, if we look at statistically, we're talking about 6 weeks, over 12,000 people, but still not even close to the reaction that we saw coming out of these Western regimes, even the first month after Russia invaded Ukraine. Your thoughts on why there's such a difference?
Well, the difference is this is a war that we support, the Ukraine side. I mean, if you look at the actual barbarism involved by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, you're seeing the same number of civilian casualties over nearly 2 years as we have just in a few weeks in Gaza. So there is really no excuse to be sending soldiers down the streets shooting teenagers in the head for no reason. Innocent people being shot in the head by soldiers. This is not the way the Russians have been conducting things. But I think there's a much wider plan. And as I say, we've got such incredible hypocrisy by the Israelis. They seem to think that they can simply get away with this because of their influence within the Western press. So they're trying to use TV news lies in order to get away with this genocide. I'm afraid we're living in the internet age now, and people all around the world, actually, if they bother to check, can see exactly what the Israelis are up to.
Okay, well, Mohsen, on the one side, I've talked about these Western regimes. If we look, though, at the Islamic countries. Now, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said that Islamic countries must cut ties with Israel. Any of them that have ties definitely should cut ties. And we see that some of these countries are still either giving access to airspace, giving gas, helping the Israeli regime. I want to talk about that side of things and the importance of at least these Muslim countries in not supporting the regime in any way.
Absolutely. So as Imam Khamenei has pointed out, that it is essential that all Muslim countries boycott the Zionist regime. And when he says boycott, as you mentioned, it does mean that airspace of Muslim countries should not, as a matter of principle, be used to bomb innocent Palestinians. If that airspace is not used, and if that support is not given to the Zionist regime in the region of West Asia, there is no way for the Zionist regime or the U.S. empire to have any kind of diplomatic or military influence in this region. To give you a small example, why is the Rafah crossing still closed? Why aren't innocent Palestinians being allowed to be treated? Why isn't Egypt opening its borders? Why is it that in the OIC summit, nothing conclusive came out? Why is it that we only saw Iraq, Iran, and Syria giving out statements, cohesive statements, against the Zionist regime? Why do we see Yemen as a country fully involved in this conflict and now attacking the Zionist regime with their missiles? Where is Saudi Arabia? And where is the UAE? These countries, it's high time that they play a constructive role in this conflict. They have the resources, they have the power. Or they don't have the power because their kingdoms are being supported or are highly influenced by the US empire. So it is but a natural understanding that those countries that call themselves Muslims, it is but natural for them to speak up against the Zionist regime, to act against the Zionist regime, if they consider themselves as Muslim governments.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Tony, your thoughts on that, because we're seeing with a lot of these Muslim countries, sometimes some of them are speaking well in condemning the Israelis, but at the same time still supporting the Israeli regime. If we look at the situation and who a lot of these leaders are and who put them in place, I think that it's understandable why they are acting perhaps in the way they are. But I also want to look at the mass movement that we're seeing in a lot of countries and the possible effect that that could also have on these Muslim leaders who have who are basically supporting the regime in one way or another.
Well, that's two questions. One is on the religious aspects. Let's have a look at China, for example, which is a big supporter of Palestine. Obviously, it's a long, long way away, but it's a superpower with a lot of clout. Now, they're not Muslims. So I think if you're looking at the mass movements on the streets, you won't see so much in China because the Chinese authorities don't like that. But you're seeing lots right across the West. I think there is an attempt, Marcia, to frame this as a Jewish versus Islam battle. Actually, I think it's nothing of the sort, because Netanyahu is certainly not one of God's chosen people. He's not acting in any way along the lines of the Ten Commandments that Moses has given to his people. He's just ignoring them. And so what you're seeing, I think, is an attempt to weaponize Judaism and to start a religious war. So I think we've got to be quite careful here in framing it as a religious conflict, because this will tend to turn people of different faiths onto different sides. Actually, certainly here in Britain, people of all faiths have been out on these marches, including Jews, Christians and Muslims on the streets of London, all coming together to oppose what is essentially and actually an anti-Abrahamic faith war that the Greater Israel bloc has been launching against Gaza, and in such a horrific fashion that I don't think anybody with any common sense would ever interpret the Israeli government as having anything to do whatsoever with God. In fact, possibly, the other side.
Right.
From they're actually, what they're doing is evil. It's not mistaken. It's not, some sort of error that they've made. It is the most definitely deliberate killing of civilians, which can only be described as evil. Nothing to do whatever with God.
Right, indeed. Well, Mohsen, we talked about as far as some of these Muslim countries and actually not doing what they're saying. But I want to look at another country. I want to look at Yemen, because on the one hand, it's a country perhaps with not a lot. I mean, compared to if we're looking at some of the Persian Gulf countries and others, but at the same time, extremely dedicated. And we have reports I'm sure that you've heard that they actually got an Israeli ship in the Red Sea, and it's in response to the massacre of the Palestinians in Gaza. I want to talk about that side of things. First of all, with their potential in being able to do this, and also their dedication in supporting their Arab and Muslim brothers here.
Absolutely. I mean, what Yemen is doing is absolutely unprecedented. The more we praise them, it's less. And Sayyid Nasrallah also mentioned in his speech, he differentiated Hezbollah the Hashd al-Shaabi as being separate entities from the government. They don't really represent the government as such. Whereas Yemen, the Ansarullah, the Houthis, they are part of the government. The actions that the Yemenis are taking are government actions. So it has more repercussions. And keeping those repercussions in mind, we need to understand that Yemen has been under... it was in war with Saudi Arabia and was heavily heavily under the bombardment of the Saudis. Yet after that war has ended, thanks to the Islamic Republic, we see them immediately engage in this conflict. Diplomatically, it doesn't make sense, technically, if you think about it. The only justification that we can have of Yemen really physically involving themselves in this conflict by saying that they will, by giving out a statement and saying that they will target all ships owned and operated by Israeli companies. No one else is doing this. It is because this is a government that makes decisions based on genuine principles. They genuinely stand with the Palestinians. And we saw that even when Yemen was under heavy bombardment, they never refrained from supporting the Palestinians. From day one, we have seen Yemen involving themselves in this conflict physically. And so it is something that really countries like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, they really need to understand that the times have changed. The times when kingdoms who were acting as US puppets in the region, that's not the future of West Asia. There's a huge shift that we see. And the narrative and the stances that countries like Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Syria are taking is the future of this region of West Asia, where we want to see Islamic countries, Muslims, Arabs, be sovereign and independent without the influence of British colonialism or US imperialism.
Well, Tony, we've seen what the Israeli regime has done in Gaza and basically targeted kids and just civilians in general. And now, militarily, from a military perspective, it's definitely not been a success. I want to talk about, or we're going to end the show with this comment of yours, in looking at the Israeli regime and how this situation in Gaza will actually has weakened it. I want your perspective in general. Weakened it, and has it weakened it to a point of that it perhaps cannot recover from? Your thoughts in general.
Well, look at the irony, Marcia. The irony is incredible. The Israeli government is accusing Hamas of trying to destroy Israel. The one entity that is doing its best to destroy Israel is actually the Israeli government. They are the most likely organization on this planet to bring about an end to the Zionist state is the Israeli government itself, because the way they're acting is actually encouraging so much opposition in those neighboring states. They are also accusing Hamas of killing hostages. Actually, it's them that's killing hostages. So we're dealing with basically a bunch of psychopaths that are trying their best to create even a wider war. That is to drag in the Americans and the Russians, to maybe drag in even the Chinese, in order to keep Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, out of jail. And to be fair, the Israeli public have been making a big fuss and protesting about this ever all this year, saying this guy is turning into a dictator. The only thing is that the rest of the world have to act, I think, somehow to help the Israeli population to put their maniac prime minister in jail.
Tony, let me just jump in here. I don't have much time, but is this just, because this is very important, is this just a Netanyahu framing of this? Is it just Netanyahu that is behind this? I mean, when we see this entire Israeli regime and what it's doing, it's not just one man. It is not just one man that is doing it. But go ahead.
There are other voices in the Knesset, but of course what's happened is Netanyahu has brought all of the far right around him now to defend him. So I think it would send a very strong message to the rest of the Israeli politicians if justice was done with Netanyahu. Ultimately, though, I think it's in the balance as to whether this war will extend. And I think it's very good to see many of these Arab states keeping out of this, knowing that the Israelis are trying to set a trap for them because they actually want a wider war. They want to drag the United States in here.
All right. And on that note, I thank both of you being with me. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist out of Houston, Texas. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on Another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan. La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Sheikh Karimi to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, there are so many questions regarding, we can say, the compilation of the Holy Quran. Of course, the right word is scripting the Holy Quran. We know that the ayahs were revealed to Prophet Muhammad, and by his order, they were recorded by the, we can say, the literate men of his time. There were some people who were literate, not so many, and they were supposed to write out the Holy Quran. One of them was Imam Ali alayhi salam. And now the question is that the current Holy Quran, which is in the hands of the people, whose scripture is this? Is it scripted by Imam Ali alayhi salam or the other caliphs? And if it was by Imam Ali or the other caliphs, were they alone in scripting down or scribing down, it's better to say, the text of the Holy Quran or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are some kinds of misunderstanding when it comes to, as many people say, collecting the Quran or scribing the Quran. And inshallah, I will try my best to remove these kinds of misunderstanding. First of all, some people think that the order of the Quran, I mean, the number of the verses and the number of the chapters, were done by the caliphs after the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. This is absolutely wrong.
Okay.
So the concept of collecting the Quran at the time of the first caliph or third caliph has nothing to do with the order of the Noble Book of Quran.
Okay.
By the order of the Quran, I mean that nowadays we have first chapter Fatiha, then Baqarah, then Ali Imran, then Nisa, Ma'idah, and the last chapter be chapter An-Nas.
Yes.
Because we know that, for example, the verses of the Quran were not revealed based on the order that we see nowadays. So, for example, the first verses were from chapter Alaq, and now this chapter Alaq is in the 30th juz of Quran. Yes. It's not the first chapter. Or the chapter Baqarah has 286. They were revealed in many different occasions.
Yes.
But then later, the order of all the chapters and the orders of all the verses were done by the order of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family.
Okay. So this is for sure that...
This is for sure.
The orders that, were done by Prophet
Muhammad. It was based on the order of the Prophet that chapter Fatiha is in the first chapter, chapter Baqarah, with all these 286 verses... is based on the order of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. So this is for sure. Now, what happened by Imam Ali alayhi salam and the other caliphs is related to another issue. So first of all, let's talk about what is known as Mus'haf of Imam Ali alayhi salam. What's done by Imam Ali alayhi salam, it's been mentioned that after the demise of the Holy Prophet, Imam Ali alayhi salam collected the Quran based on the order of revelation. So this is the feature of Mus'haf of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And according to some people, he then presented that Mus'haf to the people, to the companions, 6 months after the demise of the Prophet. We have narrations from Abu Dhar, Salman, Ibn Abbas, who have talked about Mus'haf Imam Ali alayhi salam. It was the size of a camel load, according to some narrations, and he presented to the companions, but the companions said that we are not in need of this Mus'haf, and Imam Ali alayhi salam told them that you are not going to see this Mus'haf anymore, and according to our narrations, this is one of the legacies of the imamate. Each imam gives it to the next imam, and nowadays it is with Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and may Allah hasten his reappearance.
That's right.
And inshallah, we'll see that after the reappearance of the imam. Now, what is this Mus'haf?
Sorry, the Mus'haf that you say is for sure different from the current Quran we have in our hands?
No. It's different in, I mean, the verses are the same verses, the chapters are the same chapters, but the order is based on the time of revelation. So in that Mus'haf, for example, we have first chapter Alaq, some verses of chapter Alaq, then some verses of chapter Al-Muddathir, because according to some people, it is the second chapter. And then Nun wal Qalam, and so on and so forth.
And this is not clear in the recorded history of Islam that which, for example, all the ayahs of the Quran or the surahs were revealed in what manner? Is it clear?
Some of the verses and some of the chapters are clear, but we can no one can claim that we have the order of the Quran. For there are some claims, of course, but they are not based on authentic historical reports. Yes, for some verses we can claim that chapter Alaq, for example, some verses of chapter Alaq were revealed in the first, I mean, for the first time, and for some verses and chapters we know about the year, for example, but to know the the orders of all the verses and the chapters of the Noble Book of Quran, we do not have that. This is only one feature of the Mus'haf of Imam Hadi alayhi salam. According to some narrations, the Mus'haf of Imam Hadi alayhi salam included also the occasion of the revelation, Sha'n al-Nuzul of the verses.
Yes.
And according to some narrations, it also included